Strengthening state health and education agency partnerships. What is this all about? All about how to increase and improve collaboration and communication around HIV, STD, and teen pregnancy prevention among school-age youth. So just to give an overview before our California state team talks about the process that they went through and the challenges and the successes that they've had with their state team collaboration, just want to give an overview of the whole national collaboration and how this sort of all came about. In 2002, four organizations were funded by CDC, Division of Adolescent School Health, to bring together the health department and the education department folks in all the states, or as many states as we could possibly bring together throughout the grant year. So the money was funded to four organizations. Those organizations are AMCHIP, which is the Association of Maternal and Child Health Programs, NASDAQ, National Alliance of State and Territorial AIDS Directors, the Society of Directors of Physical Education and Recreation, and also the agency that I work for, the National Coalition of STD Directors. So we were funded in 2002, and we are all still currently funded. As of 2006, we all competed again. Four organizations competing. We all sent in separate applications and grants and with our work plans about what we were going to do working together. And we were all awarded again another 5 years to continue our work through 2011. But anyway, to backtrack. So we were funded in 2002, and in 2003 we actually had our first national stakeholders meeting, which was the first meeting to bring together state teams that consisted of the health department representatives and also the education department representatives. The goal of the meeting, of course, as I said just a few minutes ago, was to strengthen communication and collaboration among those two agencies so that we can better improve HIV prevention efforts among our school-age youth. The objectives of the meeting are to articulate a shared vision. These remain the same objectives for the meeting that we just had a few months ago as the ones that started out pretty much in 2003. We've modified them a little bit, but they're still the same. Identify challenges to achieving a shared vision, that being the vision for the state team, the education and health department state team, to figure out collaborative strategies for overcoming some of the challenges that we know we all face when we're putting together these types of collaborations, and probably the rubber meets the road, the real meat of it, was to put together a state action plan for how their collaboration was going to work once they got back to their respective project areas. We wanted to describe the role of the national partners, the four agencies that were supporting the organizations and the state teams, and also talk about, more recently, we've added a health disparity, health and education disparities piece to the national stakeholders meeting as well. So to date, we had a national stakeholders meeting in January of this year. That was the last one. And to date, we have about 30 states that have gone through an NSM, as we call them. California was one of the first states in 2003, and I think you guys went together with about four other states. Typically, we have 4 to 5 state teams present at each national stakeholders meeting. I'm very happy to say, also, we're in the process of doing follow-up work with folks like California and some of the other states who have gone through the NSM in the earlier years, 2003, 2004, 2005, to check in with them and see how many of those state teams are still working together and what's going on with those state teams. And we don't have our concrete data now, but we've already made many phone calls, and it looks like about 21 teams are still doing things. So really happy about that. Once again, who are the participants that attend national stakeholders meetings? Well, the little caveat that is not listed here is that we do really want each member that comes to a stakeholders meeting to be a representative of one of the four member organizations that support that were funded. So a member of AMCHIP, a member of NCSC, a member of NASDAQ, or a member of the society. And in the past, that wasn't always the case, but now we're trying to make sure that that is always the case. So from the State Department of Health, we always like to have the adolescent coordinator, the STD director, or the HIV/AIDS director. And certainly, they're welcome to send a representative in their place if they can't make it. And also, from the Department of Ed, we'd like to have the health educator and the HIV director of education for the education department. So I know that this is like talking to the choir here, right? The choir isn't singing for some reason. I don't know why you guys are so quiet. But I know this is preaching to the choir. Why do we want to integrate HIV, STD, and unintended pregnancy? This, I mean, come on, this is a given. It reduces programmatic gaps. We know we're talking about the same audience. It just makes sense to do that. And we all know that from the talk that John Douglas had on this morning, from other talks, from the national integration efforts that CDC is leading up with the PICSI, we know that that is definitely the way to go. And of course, as I just said, the risk and protective behaviors, we're all talking about the same population. For HIV, STD, and unintended pregnancy, the risk behavior, of course, is unprotected vaginal sex, the protective behaviors, sexual abstinence. We want to use consistent, all of us saying the same language consistently, talking about consistent and correct condom use, and also all of us using the same language around abstinence and also abstinence from alcohol and other drugs. And once again, I can't say it enough, it just makes sense. So, once teams have gone through a national stakeholders meeting, basically what happens after that? Well, California is going to share with you in a moment what happened with them. But what happens from the national level with the four partners is we start to have some kind of follow-up with our state teams. So the first phase of follow-up is usually about 2 months after folks have attended the NSM, which we're starting right now, actually. Next week we're starting to have the calls for the folks who went through in January. We have a check-in call with those state teams. Find out, you know, have you had your first meeting? Have you revisited your action plan? Have you talked with your action, talked to other stakeholders about your action plan? Are there any changes that you want to make? Things of that nature. Just to see where they are. We know they're just getting back and probably just starting to talk about meeting again. Then our second phase is usually 4 to 6 months out where we have additional, more detailed conference calls with states and find out just what's going on. Are there any challenges that are starting to crop up? Any changes in membership? Things like that. Once we know that teams are really rolling, even though they may be having some challenges, we start our cross-state sharing calls, usually 8-9 months or so, where we have 3, 4, potentially even 5 state teams on a call talking about the issues that they're going through in their state, where they're able to share with folks from another state, and they can all talk about solutions and things. And those work out very well. We also do a lot of success stories, and we've just developed a clearinghouse, which is on the Society's website, where we're going to have a lot of good information, including some of the success stories. And I know you guys have already talked to some folks about putting yours in. We also check in with the teams about technical assistance needs. What are the things that now, once you're back in your perspective, what are your needs? Some of the things that the partners are able to provide are support visits, like if you do have technical assistance needs and your team has gone through, and you need someone to come out and maybe do some visioning with you or training on how to get leadership buy-in or what have you, we can support that. We provide many grants. Right now, we're up to about $3,000. So when I was doing this slide, I was trying to move that little money jar, but for some reason, the money jar kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And I'm telling you, I'm not lying. For the life of me, it was never getting any bigger. It just kept getting smaller every time I moved it around. But anyway, maybe that's why it's mini grants. But we do have provide grants available for state teams if they want to do special projects, if they want to do a newsletter, if they want to bring a speaker in, things like that. And the last thing that we are doing, our 9-month follow-up, is an online evaluation, checks in about unintended outcomes from the NSM, just what were the benefits now, 9 months later, and things like that. And we typically do that on SurveyMonkey. So this is just a quote from a participant that went through a national stakeholders meeting, and they said, real collaboration requires a willingness to give up and address territorial stuff. It's a willingness to share resources, power, and control, and that's really hard to do, but it's amazing what you can get done if you can. And I think that pretty much sums it up, and now I'm going to turn it over to Paul Gibson from the California State team to talk about their challenges, successes, and achievements. Thank you. Oh, see? You were supposed to be the one to tell me not to start it.
Hi, everyone. I'm Paul Gibson. I'm with the Health Promotion Unit of the FCD Control Branch of the California Department of Public Health. And I'm going to talk to you about the California Adolescent Sexual Health Work Group background and formation. We call ourselves ASHWG for short, which we couldn't come up with a better acronym that meant something, but ASHWG is really describes what we do. Also, I'm just curious, how many of you are from states where you actually either participate in or are aware of this effort, where you're part of a collaboration work group like this? I see California raising their hand. That's good. Illinois? Right? Okay. Good. And if you're not, then maybe after this session you will want to try to contact folks, because the STD program certainly should be involved. I presume most of you are from STD programs. But I'm going to be the first presenter from the California Adolescent Sexual Health Work Group, and then Karen and Charlotte are going to talk about perspectives from Maternal Child Adolescent Health Branch and the Department of Education, as well as the Office of Age. Gail Santabria cannot be with us today, so Charlotte is going to cover the perspective from the Office of Age. So she's going to change identities. Okay, the context and background provided by Dana is essential to understanding how the California Adolescent Sexual Health Work Group formed. The genesis of ASHWG began in 2003 at the Las Vegas Regional Stakeholder Meeting that Dana just described. The California team that attended that meeting involved the STD Control Branch, the Maternal Child Adolescent Health Branch, or Division, I think they're now called, from the California Department of Public Health, and the Office of School Health Connections from the California Department of Education. So we did not have the Office of AIDS present at that meeting. NCSD Dash and the other national partners made a point to invite branch chiefs and program directors, but all who attended from California were mid-level program managers. So we were not able to state that in our plans that we were going to establish some new direction for policy, because we weren't policymakers. So that's sort of something that we were faced with. We're going, why are we making these plans? We don't know what our directors are going to think or our chiefs. And we were fortunate to attend at all because in 2003, California state government was in a real pickle. There was the recall of the governor and a $37 billion state deficit. So we were lucky to even travel to the meeting. Since that time, though, California collaborative teams from the Department of Public Health and the Department of Education have participated in several subsequent regional stakeholder meetings and other linked meetings, most often as panelists presenting on our successes and challenges. ASHWIG evolved over a two-year period, pretty much between 2003 and 2005, although I think we could still say we're still evolving. Here are some of the key events in that evolution. And I have to say the ongoing support of NCSD, the Division of Adolescent School Health, AMCHEP, and the other national partners were critical, especially from July 2003 through September 2004, because we had some of these huge obstacles that I just mentioned to overcome, the special election of Governor Schwarzenegger, and the budget deficit was just priority number one for everyone. So it's interesting that at a time when you need collaboration most people don't want to collaborate because they want to hold on to everything they have. So it was, I think in some ways, it's incredibly remarkable facing those obstacles that we were able to pull through that. We had our first report back from the conference, from the July 2003 regional stakeholder meeting. We had our first report back to our branch chief, what we call our branch and chiefs and division chiefs. We call them the leadership group, in September of 2004. So that's what we were faced with the deficit and the recall of the governor, nobody knowing what was going to happen. We really had support from DASH and NCSD and others to continue to meet and to try to create a report back meeting to our leadership group because they are the policymakers. And we essentially got one of the mini grants and were able to get someone to help us actually plan and facilitate that meeting. We needed an outside person who couldn't be seen as one of the insiders from one branch or another or one department or another. We wanted to have an independent person sort of facilitate that meeting. And we think that went really well. They asked us to do some more development on our vision, objectives, and goals. And over the course of the next few months, we had six developmental meetings with 12 to 18 mid-level program managers from our respective programs. And then we had a second report back meeting after that in May of 2005. At that time, ASHWIG was recognized and endorsed by the branch and office chiefs. And shortly thereafter, we borrowed from the HIV community planning group model and formed two subcommittees to focus on two of our high priority objectives, which we'll get to shortly. The addition of key non-government organizations or NGOs has been critical to our success because they keep us grounded in the reality of the real world and advocate for different issues among the various populations of youth that they serve or represent. This is how we currently describe ASHWIG. It's a standing group of program managers from the California Department of Public Health, including the STD Control Branch, the California Department of Education, and key non-governmental organizations who are committed to working more effectively to address the sexual and reproductive health of California adolescents. Our vision statement has remained essentially unchanged from the 2003 Las Vegas Regional Stakeholder Meeting, and I think that's quite a testament to the planners of the meeting and the facilitators, David Knapp, among others. I'll get David's name in here. We don't have him acknowledged, but we should acknowledge him. Our goals have remained essentially the same since the Las Vegas meeting. And they are to increase awareness of ways to foster an integrative approach to HIV, STD, and teen pregnancy prevention, and to strengthen communication and collaboration among HIV, STD, and pregnancy prevention programs. The initial ad hoc work group of 12 to 18 program managers identified five high priority objectives for collaboration and integration between the California Department of Public Health and the Department of Education. The first objective involves data integration, which is not as big or complicated as integrated surveillance, which is probably, you know, just a bigger picture and probably more fundamental. What we are doing with data integration is collectively creating clear, usable, comparable and accessible HIV, STD, and teen birth data sets with harmonized variables, because each of our siloed programs previously used somewhat different definitions of racial and ethnic groups, somewhat different age ranges, and different time frames. And we also had all the data in different locations. So it was very hard for someone who wanted to look at adolescent sexual and reproductive health in the state or in a local health jurisdiction to find all of that data in one place and be able to directly compare it and use it. The second objective was to establish a foundation for cross-training in the area of adolescent sexual and reproductive health. The cross-training requires a definition and agreement on benchmarks for core knowledge and skills shared across programs. This necessitated the development of core competencies for providers of adolescent sexual and reproductive health, which I'll talk a little bit about later. And this is something that, to our knowledge, hasn't really been done before, not core competencies, but core competencies for providers of adolescent sexual and reproductive health. The development of these competencies may play a major role in meeting the new agendas in collaboration and service integration, such as Dr. Fenton's PIXI initiative. With competencies in place, we'll be positioned to create a basic training in adolescent sexual and reproductive health for all California Department of Public Health and California Department of Education staff who work directly with adolescents in this area. For objective three, the core competencies give us common language, perspective, and skill sets, which in turn make us better prepared to assess and evaluate comprehensive sexual health curricula to meet all the needs of all students, especially youth of color and LGBTQ youth. Everybody here knows LGBTQ, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questioning youth. Objective four puts us all on the same page in regards to adolescent access to sexual and reproductive health services and awareness of the legal rights of adolescents in using these services. And then obviously the need to seek and obtain funding to make policy changes and to continue our work is objective number five, which is pretty obvious. This is a snapshot of ASHWIG's current membership. The core members of ASHWIG on the left-hand side are the Office of AIDS, the STD Control Branch, Maternal Child Adolescent Health Division, Office of Family Planning from the California Department of Public Health, and the Office of School Health Connections from the California Department of Education. We also have the California Department of Alcohol and Drug Programs, which is a completely different bureaucracy from Department of Public Health or Department of Education. The non-governmental organization members have played a major role in the ASHWIG steering committee as well as in both subcommittees that we form. So the California Family Health Council essentially manages all of the Title X family planning funds that come into California. They are a huge partner, non-governmental partner. MCH Action, Maternal Child Health Action, is essentially the directors of the Maternal Child Adolescent Health Programs. California Adolescent Health Collaborative is going to play a major role in helping us get our data integration sets out and move forward with our core competencies. The Center for Health Training is a Region 9 Family Planning Training Center. They are a major trainer of providers of adolescent sexual reproductive health in California. How many of you have heard of ETR Associates? In Scotts Valley. They're huge nationally. We have them on board. The Gay Straight Alliance Network in California is involved in Gay Straight Alliances in California high schools. And I forget the latest number, Charlotte, but it's over 50% of California high schools have a Gay Straight Alliance group. Health Initiatives for Youth in San Francisco and the Internet Sexuality Information Services, or ISIS, in San Francisco, which they're doing all kinds of innovative things with SCD partner notification and text messaging and just everything. So we have a really, really good group of non-government organization partners. The subcommittees and the steering committee of ASH Week really do most of the work, while the meetings provide a forum for government and NGOs to share information and network, to provide input on current issues, to identify collaborative opportunities, and to create new affiliations for mutual benefit and programmatic synergy. That's a favorite California word, synergy. So, what benefits do all members of ASH Week share? Well, the most compelling reason ASH Week members collaborate is our overlapping priority populations of youth. We all recognize that we can best serve these youth by sharing a common vision for their well-being and by linking our programs in ways that provide a seamless transition between consistent, high-quality services. ASH Week provides a forum, structure, and opportunity to do this. By strategically considering partnerships and collaborations, we have selectively expanded membership so that we can connect with partners who we would not likely meet otherwise. I just gave you the list of the non-governmental organizations. It takes time to develop credibility and trust with potential partners in other state departments and programs or among the non-governmental organizations, and they are often left out of state planning processes. So we have intentionally involved them and brought them to the table, and they are also members of our steering committee. Some of them are, not all of them. In most of our jobs, we never have enough time to think, plan, evaluate, or collaborate. ASH Week provides a time, space, and platform for doing these critical activities. ASH Week serves as a conduit to increase communication and awareness about statewide activities, opportunities, and issues affecting adolescent sexual reproductive health in a huge state with an incredible array of adolescent agencies and programs. Membership in ASH Week encourages continuity in knowledge and expertise across our respective programs regarding adolescent sexual health needs and our statewide efforts. And finally, ASH Week membership is diverse but youth-focused. This helps us tackle the challenge of California's immense size and considerable diversity. So that's sort of the background and formation of ASH Week, what we're about. And Karen, I believe, is going to provide some perspective on ASH Week from maternal child adolescent health.
Thank you. So my name is Karen Ramstrom. I'm with the maternal child adolescent health programs with the California Department of Public Health, so the Title V programs for the state of California. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Title V, Title V funds come from HRSA through the Maternal Child Health Bureau to fund activities that to improve the health of moms and children in the state and in local areas. So the funds come to the state and those are actually distributed locally for local activities to promote the maternal child health programs. And those programs are done through prevention and primary care services for pregnant women, mothers, and for children, including youth. Requirements for Title V also include needs assessment that can be done just at the state level or locally or both. And there's also requirements for coordination of activities and outreach to facilitate access to Medicaid services. So that gives you a little bit of a framework for where we're coming from. So in California, the funds come to the state and we actually distribute most of our funds for activities at the local level. So how does MCH benefit from participating in ASH Week? Certainly it's an opportunity for us to advocate for the needs of our local MCH programs. For instance, with our data integration subcommittee work, we're able to go and express the needs, the data needs, for our local MCH partners. And that actually is really helpful come time for the needs assessment, which is done every 5 years. And it's actually done on an ongoing basis as far as monitoring the health issues with local public health activities. It also provides us, you know, we're at such a high, you know, at the state, we're a little bit disconnected, well, a lot disconnected, actually, from what's going on in the field. So it provides us an opportunity to hear from the partners that Paul mentioned earlier. What are some of those local programs so that we can actually share that information? It actually brings credibility to what we do as well. We can actually say that our local MCH programs and their partners are involved in some specific activities that resonates more with, you know, Department of Finance reports and our Title V report, rather than just saying that we work on, you know, collaboration and integration and that sort of thing. That's so nebulous. So it provides us some local examples. It's also an opportunity for us to promote one of our Title V priorities, which has to do with promoting responsible sexual behavior for youth. And that came out of our last Title V needs assessment, which was done with local input as well as state-level stakeholder input. The other thing that's really helpful for me is it actually allows me to stay tuned in to what the needs are for programs to help youth. You know, if Title V, we have some funds available, it helps me to be connected to what would be the best use of those funds, and I'll share an example with that in a little bit. MCH is also so broad. It focuses on the health, general health needs of moms, pregnant women, and children. And so it's nice to be reminded about specific needs with regard to reproductive health. In addition, for instance, preconception health and healthcare is one of the activities that MCH in California is focusing on through the Preconception Care Council of California. As we're developing that framework, STD prevention among youth and reproductive life planning among youth is part of our framework, and it's going to be helpful for us to have our partners on ASHRAE to provide some expertise in developing those messages and what those services look like. So how does ASHRAE benefit from MCH involvement? I think probably one of the best, one of the most valuable things that we do is we actually provide connections to all these 61 local health jurisdictions that we fund. It's an avenue to actually get information out, to receive information. The MCH directors in the 61 local health jurisdictions, they're responsible for assessment, policy development, assurance, evaluation, and that includes in regards to needs of youth. It's also a place for us to actually get information out and to promote action. If there's some activities that ASHRAE comes up with that they would like to promote, it's an avenue to get that information out. The other thing is it actually helps us to have a better idea about what's going on locally and what's going to fly if we're actually developing initiatives. So to have a feel for the local priorities and politics. Probably most importantly, ASHRAE provides relationships that provide a lot of that provide opportunities for, you know, things that you couldn't even conceptualize until those relationships just come about. For example, and a little bit tangential from adolescent health needs, MCH has funds Black infant health programs in 17 local health jurisdictions that provide services for African American women who are high risk for either pregnant or parenting infants. And the Office of AIDS has, had the challenge of trying to target health HIV prevention messaging to African American women, which has been a growing concern. And so we're partnering with Office of AIDS. They've been gracious enough to actually fund, through the HIV/SD Training Center, training of our Black infant health staff in those 17 local health jurisdictions. So that's been a really valuable partnership that's come out of this relationship. In addition, you know, you might, whether you're working at the state or local level, find opportunities for integration, as Paul and Dana mentioned earlier, just because we're working with the same population. So, for instance, we have programs that actually target pregnant teens, or pregnant and parenting teens. Well, those are places where we actually can work together to address STDs or pregnancy prevention initiatives. I think, you know, really MCH comes from a place of actually program integration. I mean, that's really what we have to do. Title V funds have been flat or decreasing for the last several years, so it's sort of just inherent with the way that we do our work. And so we're actually able to identify opportunities for that to work for ASHWIG activities as well. MCH, like other state partners on ASHWIG, I think brings credibility to the effort. So as we're working on data integration, we're working on these core competencies. If we could actually say that, you know, the California Department of Education and California MCH program is involved in development of those, it actually lends some credibility to those products. MCH also brings some epidemiology expertise to ASHWIG, as does SDD branch. Our EPI staff actually are responsible for the teen birth data in California. And then lastly, Title V can bring resources, and resources happen to be available. And Title V funds the California Adolescent Health Collaborative, which has been around since 1996. There's been some periods of lapsed funding as far as Title V, but they have other funding sources as well. And that group, California Adolescent Health Collaborative, is a multidisciplinary group that actually takes an asset-based approach to promoting health and wellness among youth. And we were fortunate to actually bring the California Adolescent Health Collaborative to ASHWIG. And through our current scope of work that was just initiated within the last couple months, the California Adolescent Health Collaborative is going to be able to support some of the activities of ASHWIG. And so they're going to be able to help with the data integration activities as well as with the core competencies. So once we have the core competencies, well, then what? Well, we don't have any staff to do anything with them. Well, the California Adolescent Health Collaborative is going to be able to help us with identification of training, curriculum development, and that sort of thing. So that partnership is really critical. The other thing is that the California Adolescent Health Collaborative is interested in not just sexual health of youth, sexual reproductive health, but health of youth in general, which is really important to keep us in that frame of mind as well, that we really need to focus on the health of youth overall. So I'm going to turn it over to Charlotte.
Sorry about this. We have to change mics up here because this is how they're recording us. Okay, so my first hat that I'm going to wear, I know I look like one person, but I'm actually impersonating somebody else right now. So I'm actually Gail Santabria right now for you from the State Office of AIDS for California. And I'm going to really talk about the Office of AIDS and Gail's perspective. At least we had a chance to get together in California and talk about this before I came, and she's very sad and unhappy that she's not here with us in Chicago, but she just was not able to travel. So let's look at this, because I think that every single department, State Department and non-governmental organization that belongs to ASHWIG is really there at the table, obviously for our broader overlapping reasons, right? We share the same adolescent pool. We're all interested in sexual and reproductive health. But each and every branch, or each and every division, or each and every non-governmental organization or state department gets and gives something different, which is really critical. And the Office of AIDS has been in a very unique position since they joined ASHWIG. And I have to say, much to their chagrin maybe, they've been in a great position to give others of us money. So we like that. The first thing, actually, about the Office of AIDS is largely due to the relationships that we had built up in ASHWIG. Turns out they had a little bit of a funding ability to give, to have some money become available. And instead of, you know, looking internally, you know, what should we do within the Office of AIDS, this was the first time that they ever said, we have this little pot of money we need to spend by a certain date. Do you think ASHWIG could use this money? I mean, that's unheard of. I mean, how many of you in another state think that a division that had a little bit of extra funding would say to itself, hey, let's look outside, right? Let's not look within this office or this division. Let's look outside and see what we can do with this money. And that really came from ASHWIG. So the Office of AIDS came to ASHWIG and said, we have an extra, and I'll just say it, I'm being recorded,
$20,000. What can we do with this money? Well, in California, we are in a unique state around our education code, and I'll get more into that when I speak from my own perspective, Department of Ed. But I know I'm going to go back and forth for a minute. So we actually don't have any coordinated way of doing teacher trainings. We do various things to train our teachers. But one of the things that we had been kind of batting around would be, wouldn't it be nice to have a real dedicated, you know, teacher training on sexual and reproductive health? And many of you come from states where you've heard about the itches. I mean, not those kind of itches, right? But the Institute for Community Health Education Training. In the West, we have RICH, the Western Regional Institute for Community Health Education. In the North, there's NICH, NICH, there's TEACH, they're all over the place. They're funded by Title X monies and Title IX monies from the Center for Health Training. I'm sorry, that's you guys. I just said it wrong. What are they? CHT.
Region 9.
All right. That's right. Region 9 Family Planning Training Center. So they also sit with us on ASHWIG. So Office of Aid says, we have this extra money. What do you think we should do? So we said, why don't you apply that money to RICH and offer 20 teachers a free week-long residential training program in sexuality? This has never happened. So now we're going to have RICH. You see it spelled out with a T there. I didn't say anything about a T earlier. The T is silent, but it stands for teachers. So now we're going to have the Western Region Institute for our Teachers and Community Health Educators. And many of you know that the community health educators that work for community clinics or Planned Parenthood and so on do go into the public schools and do training. And so now they're going to get training together this June. That's going to happen for a week-long residential training that's coming up. So the Office of Aid, previous to ASHWIG, would have never had an opportunity to partner with a group like this and ever to be able to look at how they could leverage money to really go outside of the Office of Aid. So that's a complete amazing benefit of being, you know, linked with ASHWIG that's never ever happened before. CDE, Department of Education, is going to take over the funding for RICH after this first year, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. The other interesting thing about being with ASHWIG is that we're sitting around having our meetings, and oftentimes, and the Office of Aid really appreciates this, we're able to discuss data or data little blips or things that we see long before we really release the data. Still when the data is in a provisional state, we kind of talk about it. You know, what is Department of Ed seeing over there? Well, what is STD seeing? You know, what are you guys seeing? And the Office of AIDS really highlights that as one of the really big benefits to them, is that the previous, they didn't sit at the table. They didn't have these discussions with STD. STD, Office of AIDS. They're on different floors in the same building. There was not a whole lot of communication amongst these two departments until about 2003. So there you go. They never sat down at the table and talked to MCAH, you know, what's going on with our pregnant and parenting kids, you know, are they still at risk for HIV? Of course, but they weren't at the table, so looking at how they share data. The other interesting thing is that really having the Office of AIDS looks at it is that part of the Office of AIDS does a lot of funding, just like MCAH does, to the local level. They have innumerable contracts out to the local 61 health jurisdictions in California. And the hope from the Office of AIDS is that we're always saying on the local level you need to collaborate. And the local level pushes back to the state and says, people have turf issues, nobody wants to talk, we keep trying to call those county offices of ed, they won't play with us, you know, on and on and on. And if they can see maybe that the state is actually trying to link up and collaborate, we're hoping that by, you know, example, we'll see that the local, you know, health jurisdictions will also try to do some collaboration as well. I gotta process my own slides here. All righty. So there are some challenges, and many of you know the challenges. The silo funding, you know, we don't need to sing that song anymore, right? We all know about silo funding. The critical thing, though, is that California has faced two significant budgetary crises. This is our second one, I think. The state is claiming right now that we have a $17 billion deficit. Is that right? It changes daily, right? Depends on whose math you're talking to. But But here we are again in California amidst another huge budget crisis, and yet we're still coming to the table with our arms out and our hands open and saying, this is what I have. What do you guys have? How can we really look at this? How can we share what we have? And that's also just not ever occurring, really. The Office of AIDS is also really pleased with being able to partner with a lot of non-governmental organizations, which in the past they have not really had an opportunity to do, nor have they had really a way to go about and do that. So their partnership with MCAH is really benefiting them largely through their non-governmental organizations. And then the interesting thing is that all of us have different funding streams, and yet the same funding streams. For the Office of AIDS, one of their primary funders is also the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is also one of Paul's primary funders from STD Control. Also, it's some of your funding, but very, very different how it goes through to MCAH. It's all of my funding for the California Department of Ed. And yet, every single one of us has a different project officer, different reporting, different time frames for our reporting, different forms that we fill out, different requirements of our money. So one of the biggest things that we came up with was actually, we're going to talk about this, was having shared goals and objectives in ASHWIG that each of us will report back to our project officers and that we will use to start using our benchmarks. Now, I don't know about you. I know one person in the room has definitely just heard whether or not they got their money from DASH, the Division of Adolescent School Health. But we have to write a 5-year grant, just like I had to write when I worked in STD. Right? You write this big 5-year grant for what you're going to do. And this was the first time that Department of Ed wrote in and said, hey, as part of ASHWIG, we are going to do these stated goals with our partners. The Office of AIDS also wrote that into their report saying, as part of ASHWIG, the Adolescent Sexual Health Working Group, this is what we're working on. So we're also pushing back to the federal level saying, you told us to collaborate, and now we're doing it. So here you go. So that's also hard. And everyone knows about, you know, trying to find busy time and schedules to meet. It's a little bit harder in California just because of the sheer size of our state, because some of our non-governmental partners are in Southern California. But we're really lucky. They have regular meetings that they need to come to Sacramento for. And so the Office of AIDS is in Sacramento. Part of the STD Control Branch is in Sacramento. Part of the Department of Ed is in Sacramento. MCH is in Sacramento. So when we're all going to be there, we try to connect up and have a meeting so that we don't, you know, make other added expenses for cost, you know, for cost benefits. But, of course, there's been some unanticipated benefits, even for the Office of AIDS. The first one I just mentioned was becoming aware of everyone else's was working on the same thing. Like, let's actually put down a shared objective and actually say what our barriers are to each of our respective project officers so we start getting the message back to the federal level. And we came up with our set objectives actually at a meeting that we were all at in, I believe we were in Albuquerque that time. Yeah, we were in Albuquerque, and we were sitting at the table, and we said, okay, that's it. Let's actually just come up with some shared objectives that we can all agree upon, and let's start working on them for each different part. And we came up with that at an NSM. So these things are really working. Part of it, too, for the Office of AIDS is that they're so focused on HIV and AIDS prevention that they're having to kind of retool and relearn how to navigate for all of sexual and reproductive health landscape. They've been so narrowly focused in California, they haven't really broadened out and thought about, well, those kids who are getting pregnant also have a risk for HIV, right? They were like, well, that's MCH problem. You know, they got to deal with that. And they're like, well, those kids that are in, you know, in school every day, they should be getting HIV, STD prevention education, but, you know, that's Department of Ed's daily wig, right? And so here we are, we're all sitting at the table, we're all seeing really, you know, what these unanticipated benefits are that are coming to us. And finally, for example, obtaining these opportunities to collaborate on projects. The Office of AIDS, like I said, would never think about funding RICH, you know, the Western Region Institute for Community Health Educators and Teachers, but also just looking around, they've never really thought about how to collaborate, you know, more appropriately and better than with MCAH. This is a marked change in their behavior and a big difference in how they themselves, within the Office of AIDS, talk about adolescent health and youth and what really they're doing around HIV prevention. And does it benefit or is it taking something away from the STD control branch? Or, you know, we should talk to them about what they're doing with their youth and how can we all collaborate on unified messages and unified ways to talk to our youth in California. So with that being said, I'm going to change hats. I'm the same person, but now I'm myself. So I'm Charlotte Smith, and I represent the California Department of Education. I know, isn't this fun? Gail would be so proud. So I actually am in charge of all HIV STD prevention education for K through 12 in California. Not to scare you guys, but California has 6.3 million school children. So it's a big, big job, and we're spread out all over. So being part of ASHWIG for us has been significant. Now granted, the Department of Ed has a big leg up because I used to work for the STD Control Branch. So when I changed buildings and changed floors, I already had the Department of Public Health down, and I really understood the Office of AIDS and STD Control. I didn't really know that much about MCH, so I was really terribly pleased when they came along. But it makes for an interesting partnership with Department of Ed. And this is one of the critical ones. When I went to the Department of Education in 2005, part of the role of this job that I have is doing compliance. So ensuring that school districts are really teaching HIV/AIDS prevention education in the schools. California never took the federal abstinence only until marriage money. We're doing a different thing. We're staying with the science. So when I got there, I said, well, how does the Department of Education make the decision, you know, which school districts you're going to go look at, which schools, you know, how do you guys decide this? And they said, well, largely we go to places because we hear things. And I'm like, who's talking to you and what can you hear? Right? They were really going out and doing compliance reviews because they heard that it could be bad, or that it was really good, maybe we should go look at that, or they heard rumbling. Well, that's like stabbing in the dark in California, right? 6.3 million school children, where should you be going? So I said, you know, in a meeting, I don't know, maybe we should actually look at STD and teen birth rate data and see where is it high. If we have high incidence of STDs in youth and high incidence of teen birth rate data, might it not follow that maybe they're not getting the right preventative education in their school system? Right? So I went over to STD Control Branch and said, hey, you guys, I need that data set. And they said, all right. And they passed it over. And I overlaid it with our school districts that were having poor performance evaluations or who were in trouble for academic, API, you know, all the federal NCLB stuff. And surprise, surprise, some of it matched and some of it didn't. But the Department of Education was not making decisions based upon data. They were making decisions based upon largely hearsay. And so now, from 2005 forward, we're really prioritizing our school districts and our school sites for where to do compliance reviews based upon STD and teen birth rate data. That previously, is that relationship never existed, and a lot of it came out of ASHWIG. Finally, our superintendent, Jack O'Connell, is very clear about the fact that California needs to close the achievement gap. Very plainly, we've known this for years, but he's the first superintendent that's been very open about it, which is that our African American and our Latino students in the same socioeconomic status routinely score at least 6-8 times worse than our white students in the same economic strata. That's unacceptable. So for the first time, we have a superintendent who says, we need to really look at closing this achievement gap. Well, he's also one of the first superintendents that gets it. Health is academic. If you are sitting in class and you are stressed out about the fact that you caused a pregnancy, that you might be pregnant, that you might have an STD or whatever, you know, the quadratic equation is always going to be A squared plus B squared equals C squared. But if you're perseverating on a different issue surrounding your sexual and reproductive health, guess what? You missed it. You missed it. And you missed it. And later on when someone says, hey, what's the quadratic equation? Or you're taking an exam and you're like, I don't know. Right? It doesn't come back. Right? There's not this catch-up for those of you that were daydreaming about what your issue was. Right? So health is academic. Also, many of you know, everyone knows this in the room, STDs follow lines of poverty, right? That's also not new. But getting that information across to higher-ups at Department of Ed that was news to them, right? Because we think about disease as being what? Related to when you're old, you know, you get heart disease, you get all those other things. They kind of got the, you know, obesity and the type 2 diabetes risk, but nobody had ever sat down with the Department of Ed and said, hey, one of our critical issues is STDs, teen pregnancy prevention, and HIV. Now they're getting it. And then finally, using data is really helping the Department of Education really look at what's a geographic focus that the Department of Ed can really, you know, look at. You know, I hate to say it, I hate to, you know, be so bold, but, you know, there's only one of me and I'm in charge of the whole state of California. Despite the fact that I travel a lot, I can't be everywhere at all times to all people. So really looking at having a geographic focus about how we'll do our teacher trainings and how we'll start to really assist people on the local level is going to have an impact over the long haul. So then that means how does Ashwig benefit from having CBE at the table? Well, one of them is this whole programmatic synergy. See, we love that word, synergy. Then results from it, and really that whole thing that comes out of, you know, having all this, you know, the synergy comes out of us actually knowing each other. I mean, Paul and I worked together for 6 years, I think 6 years. And, you know, in that time frame, we started working with the Office of AIDS, but really things became focused and gelled once we formed Ashwig by going to these collaborative meetings. But how we keep these things going is really that. It's the personal and professional relationships that we have with each other. That's always one of the critical things I say, is that when you go home to your state, think about, who do I know immediately in that other division? Who do I personally know that if I called them up and said, let's get together and talk about this over lunch, they would come? Because that's going to start the trail that you need to be on. We sort of loosely knew about each other. Some of us knew each other really well. Karen didn't come to California to work until 2006. And we heard about her appointment over at MCH, and Paul and I called her up. We were like, hi, Karen, you don't know us, but I work for Department of Ed, I work for STD, you should come talk to us. And she's like, okay. She was brand new to the state. We got her from Colorado, but we went out and started talking and told her about, you know, what we were doing with Ashwig, and would she like to come play with us, and could she get MCH on board, and now we're here, right? So you got to think about that. And the support that we get from each other also helps for us to support Ashwig to our higher-ups, really. And we'll talk about some of our successes. So what about the new partnerships that this has opened up for Department of Ed? Department of Ed has never done a kind of teacher training that we've done where we're going, you know, that we're going to embark upon with Rich. The Office of AIDS is paying for the first year. We're going to pay for the next 5 years of Rich, where we're going to help bring in the 20 teachers. Now, remember that geographic location thing I told you about? And some of you might have been in the data integration meeting this morning. Well, in California, our Central Valley has the highest incidence of teen STDs and teen pregnancy. So we're going to do a concentrated effort to train teachers in those 5 counties in our highest incidence area. We're going to train there first, because that's where we have the greatest need. Department of Ed never had that kind of focus before. Also, because of our work with the Department of STD Control Branch, I'm sorry, Department of Public Health, we actually worked together on a new course, STD Overview for Educators. It's an actual STD overview course that's designed around the teacher day. And it starts off in the morning not with what's data. It starts off with, what does the education code say that you have to teach, which everyone seems surprised about what they're supposed to teach. But after that, then we go through the data, and then we go through the STD overview material and keep referring back, this is where that fits into the education code. This is where that fits into your school day. This is how you answer those tough questions for students in your classroom. So it's a completely different STD overview than the one that we previously had for non-clinicians. So it's also focusing on that. And then, of course, the joint objectives that I talked about, you know, previously, that's also new for California Department of Ed. And then we've also had some challenges, right? Department of Ed hasn't been used to working across the street with our Department of Public Health partners. So, you know, Department of Ed people were a little bit grabby when it came to money, right? They were like, no, Charlotte, don't be telling them how much money you have. Don't tell them what you can do with that money. This is our silo. We protect it. And I'm like, we got to play, right? We have to show up. We have to be able to open our hands up and say, this is what I have. What do you all have? How can we do this together? So that's a little tough for California Department of Ed, but they're, you know, they're learning to get over it. The other thing that's interesting for Department of Ed is that HIV STD prevention education is required in California's public schools, at least once in middle school and once in high school. Comprehensive sexual health education is permissible. It may be taught in any grade, kindergarten through grade 12. 96% of California schools self-report that they do comprehensive sexual health education. I know. They self-report that. So what is it really? I'm not sure, right? But the interesting thing is that the Office of AIDS has a specific focus, right? They say, we need to do HIV prevention. The STD Control Branch has a specific focus. We want to do STD and HIV prevention, right? More focused on STD. MCH has a different position. Department of Ed is like, yeah, but the HIV prevalence is so very low for our students who are in school. How do we work with our partners in Ashwig, and how do we as a Department of Ed sign on to a broader sexual and reproductive health arena when the law says that we really need to focus on HIV/AIDS prevention? But like I said, Department of Ed is starting to get that when you really look at closing the achievement gap and that health is actually academic. So if we can, you know, do things to empower students' health, we're going to make them a better academic achiever. And through that avenue is really how I've been able to get California Department of Ed to kind of sit at the table and listen to some of this. So the other thing that's going to be hard is when we have to get our teachers and our school site members to understand the core competencies. And Paul would never do this, so I'm going to do it. Paul is speaking on the core competencies tomorrow, and I have no idea what session number it is, but I would look at that because core competencies for adolescent sexual health providers, what is the most basic thing that you need to know to go out and do that kind of work? So we're going to look at how to retool that with largely the help of NCAH and then their collaborative, of the Adolescent Health Collaborative, of how to come up with curricula and training, and then we'll bridge that over for our teachers to make sure that our teachers are adequately providing comprehensive sexual health and HIV STD prevention education for the state. And you guys have heard long and hard and all kinds of things about how big California is, but we're a big, big state, but we are actually making it work. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Paul Gibson, and he's going to talk specifically about his perspective.
Hello, I'm back. I was trying to sound like Arnold, our governor. I'm going to talk about Ashwig collaboration, the perspective of the STD Control Branch, and a little bit about the core competencies in case you can't come to my talk tomorrow, because it is one of the things that we feel like is an achievement that benefits everybody, including the STD Control Branch. As Karen and Charlotte have demonstrated, the whole of Ashwig is really bigger than the sum of its parts. So while each branch contributes, we also benefit. So how does the California STD Control Branch benefit from being involved in Ashwig? Well, we benefit from partnering with organizations that are STD aware and that have integrated STDs into their programs because they often have, let's be frank about it, more resources than we do. And they too are trying to access many of the same priority populations for similar reasons. And I think the slide that Dana showed earlier showing what are the risk factors in common, this is one of the things I think that Ashwig helps us all see, is that what do we have in common? Because as you know, when an adolescent goes out tonight and has unprotected sex, they're not thinking, okay, tonight I'm just taking the risk of chlamydia. And then the next time they have unprotected sex, they're not thinking, okay, tonight I'm just taking a risk for unplanned pregnancy. All of that happens every time. And I think we all have to keep that in mind with our programs and our messages. But here are a couple of examples, just specific examples of how greater access to overlapping youth populations. Through our partnership with the Office of Family Planning, they have a community challenge grant program that's like funded for like $18 million every year, which is exceeds the total budget for the California STD Control Branch, federal and state. The one program to prevent teen pregnancy. Through that collaboration in Ashwig, We have, the STD Control Branch, has ready-made access to over 115 local agencies across California and hundreds of thousands of at-risk youth who we couldn't possibly reach through our funding levels. Another example is that ASHWIC facilitates collaboration with the California Department of Education and the Gay-Straight Alliance Network, which I mentioned before. Gay-Straight Alliance Network focuses on reaching LGBTQ youth in school settings, and they are reaching young men who have sex with men through a more holistic approach than just focusing on HIV and STD prevention alone. Our perspective is always STD, HIV prevention. If you're a young MSM, that is not necessarily your perspective. So this is a more holistic approach to accessing those populations and in ways that they may be more open to our input. The underlying issues and factors that contribute to racial and ethnic disparities transcend the limitations that are imposed by funding streams. Some of these issues are also entwined with the risk and protective factors that contribute to HIV, STD, and unplanned pregnancy. These are huge issues that impact entire communities, and the STD branch alone cannot tackle them. We really need to have partnerships. So it will take comprehensive multilateral efforts to even begin to address these issues. ASHWIC fosters a more holistic perspective, and ongoing dialogue among our members leads to a more comprehensive understanding and approach to these complex issues. All members of ASHWIC have a vested interest in supporting comprehensive sexuality education that Charlotte just mentioned, which is not yet required in California. Every member of ASHWIC would like to see comprehensive sexuality education required. From the STD branch perspective, we would really like to make sure that includes STDs, obviously. And if you go to most curricula on comprehensive sexuality education, they do include STDs. But if you look at current curricula for HIV or pregnancy prevention, for the most part, STDs receive only lip service, no pun intended. Partnerships that are forged or enhanced through ASHWIC also open up new opportunities for STD awareness and prevention, and we've already realized some tangible results. Charlotte just mentioned the creation of the new training, the STD HIV update for educators that we have developed in collaboration with the California Department of Education. It covers basic HIV STD information with a youth focus along with information on the state education code and what teachers should be teaching. We also have more requests for STD update trainings in general for family planning staff, and that often comes through the Office of Family Planning, a non-governmental organization partner, the California Family Health Council, and the Center for Health Training. We also have the initial creation, as I've mentioned before, of the integrated HIV, STD, and teen birth data, which in effect elevates the visibility of STDs and helps illustrate their connection to other diseases or connections. I think this is critically important for STD programs to realize, is that we can promote STD awareness and prevention, and integrated data allows us to do this. It kind of shows that connection and helps focus back on, well, what do all these things have in common? Certain risk behaviors. What do they have in common? Certain risk and protective factors. What do they have in common? You know, certain context in certain community situations. So this is something that the Office of AIDS, the STD branch, Office of Family Planning, the California Family Health Council, Maternal, Child, Adolescent Health, we all need to address many of these same overlapping factors. It goes back to that slide that Dana showed. And as Charlotte mentioned, the development of core competencies for providers of adolescent sexual and reproductive health could serve as a first step towards competency-based cross-training, which is part of, or which really supports, Dr. Kevin Fenton's PIXIE initiative. How does ASHWIC benefit from the STD Control Branch involvement? Well, STD programs often feel that STDs rarely get adequate attention or funding, especially when compared to funding levels for HIV/AIDS or teen pregnancy prevention. So ASHWIC provides a forum for articulating the STD problem to colleagues in closely related fields and increasing their understanding of STDs, that is, a more holistic approach to sexual and reproductive health as a larger context. ASHWIG also establishes a common agenda for adolescent sexual and reproductive health. Through collaboration, we have an opportunity to dissolve the artificial parameters and restrictions placed on us by our siloed funding streams. So this opens up opportunities for others to take a new look at STDs and better integrate STDs into their work, and that's mutually beneficial for everybody. The California STD Control Branch provides direct support to ASHWIG through staff who serve on the ASHWIG Steering Committee and on both the Data Integration and the Core Competency Subcommittees. This can be time-consuming work, but it also generates immediate and long-term benefits to STD prevention and control. And the California STD Control Branch is adept at relaying the local perspective. And I think that that's something that NCAH also talks about, is their ability to bring the local perspective to the state. We're somewhat unique in that we maintain field offices in other parts of California besides Sacramento. We have field office staff in San Diego, Long Beach, Orange County, Bakersfield, Fresno, Stockton, and Oakland. And they're much closer to the pulse of local communities and often have a more immediate sense of local issues and the variation among local priority populations. However, the challenges of collaboration are all too real. With few exceptions, STD programs typically have fewer resources to contribute to collaboration efforts. And it takes time to establish trust and credibility with other programs that are unfamiliar with us. So a decision has to be made that the immediate sacrifice of time and effort will pay dividends now and in the distant future. Fortunately for us, Dr. Gail Bolin, who's the chief of the STD Control Branch in California, has made such a decision in regards to ASHWIG. She has supported our efforts from the beginning. Still, silo funding, here we are again, silo funding often restricts our ability to collaborate, and sometimes we find ourselves duplicating the efforts of others to reach the same adolescents in the same groups in the same communities. This can lead to confusion, frustration, and inefficiency. So ASHWIG allows us to at least begin to try to overcome this barrier and this challenge. There's something else too. Because of the emphasis on early detection and treatment, STD programs have traditionally focused on disease intervention and control rather than the promotion of healthy sexuality. Pregnancy, even unwanted pregnancy, is never viewed as a disease. With no cure or vaccine, AIDS programs long ago shifted to the hot and safe approach to more healthy, health-conscious sexual expression. The nuances of these historical differences in programs can sometimes cause misunderstandings and disagreement between STD programs and our partners. Participating in ASHWIG has really helped us to focus on a more health promotion, health positive aspect for sexual and reproductive health. I mentioned before, we've mentioned several times, the development of the core competencies is one of ASHWIG's accomplishments, and I want to, and as a benefit to the STD Control Branch, I want to say a little bit more about them here. The core competencies were developed over a two-year period by the Core Competency Subcommittee, and through three phases of review and feedback involving California experts from various disciplines and programs, including the STD Control Branch, a web-based survey of teachers and STD, HIV, and pregnancy prevention practitioners, and a panel of national experts in adolescent sexual and reproductive health who are still providing final revisions for the 2008 edition of the core competencies. The STD Control Branch has had staff involved in the development, review, and revision of the core competencies from start to finish. So you're probably saying, what is a core competency? Well, in the realm of adolescent sexual and reproductive health, this is how we've defined it. A competency is a benchmark for the knowledge, ability, or skill that a provider should possess in order to deliver effective and appropriate adolescent sexual and reproductive health services and programs. In other words, core competencies are a benchmark for a minimum degree of competence. Core means mutually inclusive across each competency domain and across all provider job types. For instance, DIS, disease intervention specialist, communicable disease investigators, health educators, clinicians, counselors, teachers. This is quite a challenge to develop. You want to find out more I can tell you more about that, or you can access the recording of the presentation from tomorrow. Originally, over 150 core competencies were developed, but through that three-phase review process, these were narrowed down to 52 mutually inclusive competencies in five domains: the professional and legal domain, adolescent development, youth-centered approach and youth culture, sexual and reproductive health, pregnancy, STIs, and HIV. And you notice we're using STIs, not STDs. And that's a concession to our family planning and MCAH partners, who don't refer to STDs as STDs, but as STIs. We all know what that means, those of us from the STD field. These are further subdivided into two subdomains, the cognitive for what a provider knows, and the operative for what a provider does. In real terms, how do the core competencies benefit ASHWIG, including the STD control branch? Well, the core competencies facilitate adoption of a shared perspective, a shared language, and shared knowledge and skills that bridge HIV, STD, and family planning and education programs. They have the potential to enhance staff capability and consistency across programs. They support integrated services. They lay the foundation for competency-based trainings, including cross-training. It's clear that Dr. Fenton's PIXI initiative has laid out the future direction for STD programs from the federal level down to the local level. ASHWIG has actually anticipated this approach in California and has already laid the foundation for STD programs at the state and local level to work in close partnership with HIV, maternal child, adolescent health, family planning and education programs, and our non-governmental organization partners to address STDs in the context of sexual and reproductive health. The core competencies provide the framework and content for making this happen. So, we hope that you we've provided some insight and ideas for how collaboration efforts can be mutually beneficial to your STD programs and between your STD programs and other potential partners in your state. And this is our current contact information, which is on the slide. We have some other slides that we thought we might summarize some of the accomplishments and sort of the wish list of ASHWIG in the future, but we thought that this being a symposium, we would give you a chance to maybe ask us some questions, and maybe some of that information would come up in the context of your questions or discussion. And Dana, I don't know if you want to lead this, or we'll just open it up for questions or comments. And if there are none, then we'll go to those slides and we'll let you go early. I'll comment a little bit, and for recording purposes, essentially the question was, as all of the members of ASHWIG got together from our different perspectives and started talking about how we were going to address adolescent sexual reproductive health and what that might involve, the question was, well, what did parents feel about that? And maybe by implication, how were they involved? Okay, and she's shaking her head yes, for those of you who can't see. I would say, I'm going to say one thing, which is that I think that is probably one area where we haven't really brought parent groups to the table, okay? Although I would say that there are connections to parent groups through our membership. And one of the slides, we partnered with, this is one of our accomplishments, if you look at the second bullet here, we partnered with the Center for Research on Adolescent Health and Development, which is a program of the Public Health Institute in Oakland, non-governmental, non-profit organization, to study issues of relevance to adolescent sexual and reproductive health policy. And they actually did several studies, and some of them overlap, and there are three publications. One of them, in the middle, is a very exhaustive study they did on California parents' perspective on beliefs regarding school-based sex education policy. And they did a survey of different regions in the state and found overwhelming support for comprehensive sexuality education. And the interesting thing about this study was is that they didn't just say comprehensive sexuality education. They defined what that meant and then asked about parent support for each component of it. Because oftentimes when we say comprehensive sexuality education, or we shorten it and we say sex education, for people who don't know, if you don't define that, a lot of parents think you're going to teach my kids how to have sex. That's what sex education sounds like to them. Well, when we defined it, or when the Public Health Institute defined it and then broke it down into component parts and asked, you know, do you support this being covered in schools at the middle school level and at the high school level? They found overwhelming support with every major ethnic and cultural group. They found overwhelming support actually among evangelical Christians. They found support in every part of the state, including the Central Valley, where we have probably the strongest proponents of abstinence-only education, and Charlotte knows this too, where they have where we have the highest teen birth rates and we have the highest STD rates. Parents were agreeing that it was good to do it.
I know, we hate to do this to you, but the session's being recorded. They gave us three separate warnings to not get away from this little mic. So to further answer that question, not only the Public Health Institute, which I think gives us a broad, you know, really good basis, and I think your question is excellent and it's really valid. You know, what do parents think? And when we can talk about this publicly and say, this is what parents think, but also that ASHRAE was involved in the question formation. You know, they came to us and we talked to them and said, well, can you break it down bit by bit and not just say this broad, you know, how do you feel about sex education? Because that's not really getting at what we needed to know. The other two critical things I think to think about is that one of our other partners, and it went by so fast it's hard to think about it, but in California we have the California School Boards Association. And they are one of our partners in ASHRAE, and they actually sat with us and worked on the core competencies with us. We have a great relationship with the School Board Association. Now, just like in many of your states, who runs for school board? Parents, right? Usually because they're largely unhappy with something that's going on at their schools, right? And they want to get on the school board because they want to fix it. And so working with our School Boards Association and working with the membership organizations of that, especially the new board members, that's where we really have an opportunity to talk with them, and I do it, about what is ASHRAE, what is the Adolescent Sexual Health Working Group, and what does the education code say that your child should be taught about, you know, sexuality in the school day? And that's really a time for us to kind of break down some of those barriers, some of those myths, some of those, you know, issues that parents have that are going on. Every single time across the board when I've worked with new members of the California School Board membership and they find out about ASHRAE, they are in wholehearted support. Because they have seen their previous children, some of their older children, you know, my child was enrolled in a male involvement program and he was told something totally different in that program than he was told in the school day. And then when he was in an after school program that was being funded by a separate California organization, he was told something else. And honestly, I didn't know the answer when he came home and said, what's the right answer? I mean, parents tell me that all the time. So when I say to them, no, we're trying to all get on the same page, they're ecstatic. And then the other thing is that the Department of Education, I spoke at the big state PTA conference, you know, 6,000 parents 2 years ago in the Sacramento Convention Center, and I'd never been in a room with that many people before, much less have to speak to them. And I spoke to them about really what does the education code say, and then, you know, how do you as a parent talk to your child about sexuality? And then I finished up my talk with kind of talking about, well, what is the state's role? You know, what is the state doing? And when I got to talking about ASHRAE, you know, that was the number one question from the group. When I finally said, are there any questions, people were ecstatic to learn about ASHRAE because the parents were like, great, you mean so my kid no matter where they are, no matter how they're interacting with whatever state funding that's coming their way, it should be, you know, coordinated. And I said, it should be. It's currently not, but we're getting there. So we're actually doing really well with our parent involvement. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, he's saying with all of the great support that he sees, what's the big obstacle to just legislating comprehensive sexual health education? Well, honestly, the big obstacle is that you still, you know, despite the fact that we're California, I know everyone thinks of Hollywood and all other stuff, but we do have our own significant constituency that is very conservative, and very conservative to the far, far, far right. And I know that many of you think that those people don't live in California, but they do, in big numbers, because we're a big state. And honestly, the legislation that changed our education code, California's education code in 1992 required HIV prevention education. And slowly throughout the years, that code has been added to and added to and added to. And its last big change happened in 2003. And in 2003, the bill was up saying, we want mandatory HIV AIDS prevention education, once in middle school, once in high school, covering these seven tenets, and we want comprehensive sexual health education. I think it was really a failure of discussing with our legislative members what constituted comprehensive sexual health education, because it immediately got shortened down to talking about it around the legislative halls about sex ed. And a lot of legislators backed away from that and said, I can't support that. I see that there is a public health crisis for HIV, but I'm not so sure about the sex ed part, using the wrong nomenclature. And so they backed away from it. It went into a long, long, long protracted debate in our legislature, in our body. And finally, the legislature said, we will vote and we will actually approve for this broadening of HIV STD prevention education, because Education Code 51934.4, I know I have it memorized, no one else needs to know this, says that you will also discuss the public health issues directly related to HIV. We look at that and we say, what public health issue is directly related to HIV? Preventative issues, STD prevention. So that's how we fold it into the Ed Code. But the legislature, in that long protracted debate, really said, we're not going to pass this if it has to be added on to comprehensive sexual health. And after weeks, the part of the non-governmental partners that were supporting comprehensive sex education said, let's back off and at least get this passed and get our education code broadened for HIV STD prevention ed, and then we'll go back. So it actually is not a dead issue in California, but when we went into a big budget deficit and our governor was getting recalled, we decided that was probably not the best time to go at the legislature and say, hey, let's expand the education code to talk about sexual health. So it's actually on the table and it will come back up, and the biggest barrier largely is around education of the constituencies that vote for these senators, these legislators, because I think that we have to start getting on the table and using the right nomenclature and making it clear to people that we're not teaching students how to have sex. We're teaching them about ways to know about their sexual and reproductive health and trying to provide them not only with the knowledge of how to protect their sexual and reproductive health, but the skill set to do so. And I think that once we do a few more, you know, working with our partners, the School Board Association, the PTA, et cetera, I think we will have the groundswell of support that we can go back to the legislature and really work on that. But we have to look at what's the right time frame. Unfortunately, we have term limits in California, and we are going to lose, right now, we have a significant body of legislators who we term, you know, playfully behind their backs as the health, the public health legislators, because they really do a lot of their bill writing around issues of public health, and almost every single one of them is going to term out this year. So now we're looking at who's going to run and how do we start developing those relationships, which I might add, this is a critical component in case you guys don't think of this. We are state employees. We cannot lobby. You know, we can't do that kind of work. We all do the kind of work that, you know, is a little bit gray. We're not going to really discuss it. You guys know what I'm talking about. But we need to have our non-governmental partners. And for example, the California Family Health Council, they are a critical partnership to us because they have lobbyists. So when we say to them, this is what we think, you know, we can get at some of these issues by going through our non-governmental organizations. And we also, the Department of Ed, has a whole different set of partners that are non-governmental that work specifically on legislation, and that's how we work, you know, that partnership that way.
I just want to add one quick answer to that, too, is that I think the legislature, especially since now we're in our second major budget crisis, is very reluctant to pass unfunded mandates. And so, you know, I think we could probably get comprehensive sexuality education mandated, but then somebody's going to say, who's paying for it? Are you going to put that? Yes,
right.
Yeah. Who's going to pay for the teacher training? Who's going to pay for the implementation? And there are some costs. We've tried to do some projections on cost of that. And right now, I think, especially this year with a $17 billion deficit, that's not something we would want to try to push, or we would want our non-governmental partners to try to push. The question is, do we have relationships or partnerships with any of the private healthcare providers like Kaiser or some of others? And I think Charlotte said she wanted to address this. We don't have them as members per se of ASHWIG right now. And one reason is, I just want to mention this, is that we started out, if you remember, we started out as we wanted to make sure that we could collaborate between the Department of Education and within the Department of Public Health. MCAH, Office of Family Planning, STD, and Office of AIDS all have different silo funding. And so we said we want to make sure that we don't lose focus of that. If we start bringing other partners in, then people want to change agendas and objectives. And we wanted to carefully bring partners in and not lose sight of our objectives. And if we bring them in and they buy into our objectives, fine. But, I mean, it really takes a lot to work on just the two priority objectives we have, the core competencies and data integration. And I think that this is something that we really need to look at, is how can we bring these other partners in. Our I think it's our fourth objective is about ensuring access to care, for adolescent access to care for sexual and reproductive health, and the legal issues. Well, clearly, those partners would be part of that. But right now, we feel like if we started working on that objective, we start losing our ability to work on the first two objectives. So we kind of prioritize our priority objectives.
And then knowing that we have objective four coming down the pike, it's actually interesting how this works now with ASHWIG, right? Is that I spoke at a conference, and in the audience was a woman who's in charge of all of the physician and all of the nurse training. So she's in charge of making sure that they get regular routine medical updates and that they're doing their thing. And she heard me speak, and she called me up, and she said, hey, I'd love for you to come down to Kaiser and give them an STD HIV overview update. And I said, well, that's really not within the purview of the Department of Education. I mean, you saw me giving a training that was teachers, and you were there, you know, kind of haphazardly, I guess. And so I said, have you met the STD control branch physicians that work for the training center? And they're actually down the street from you in Oakland, you know, some are in Richmond, some are in Oakland, and da-da-da. And we started talking about who she could connect up with. Well, one of the people that I gave her a name for, Linda Cregan, is a nurse practitioner, works for the STD control branch. And I ran into her, of course, in baggage claim, and she said, gosh, thanks for getting Kaiser to call us. So Like, we've been after them for years. Years we want to get in there and work with them and train their physicians and everything. And she said she called me up, and we talked, and it's going to be great. I've got her lined up and all her staff and all these things lined up. And I said, well, okay, but don't let her forget that, you know, we have objective number 4 coming up with Ashwig. So it's actually interesting because she actually called my cell phone this morning and said, you know, hey, I want you to know I talked to Linda Cregan and we're going to do all this, but we're also having trouble with this school district near one of our big medical clinics.